and welcome once again to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability fun news, facts and reviews, brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, leaders commit to recovery during Climate Week 2020. Sales targets are set for plant-based meat alternatives. Catastrophic flooding in South Sudan. And $10 trillion being spent on clean energy. Joining me to discuss these and more as usual is Russell. Afternoon, Russell.
Afternoon, Mike. I really feel that I should do a bong in between each of those headlines. I don't know why.
Okay, well, if you can refrain from that feeling, that would be good. Also coming up are our sustainability selection, Action Alley, and a bit of a different fact or fake this week. We'll also be talking about wild things, Evian, solar, recycling, ASOS, Airbus, hydrogen, toilet flushing, clocks, Joshua trees, mangroves, and some rather colourful parrots. So, this week, if you didn't know, has been Climate Week 2020. More than 60 countries, including France, Germany and the UK, have pledged to promote sustainable economic systems and slash pollution by 2050. The leaders' pledge for nature was introduced on Monday with 64 signatories. By signing this, leaders are going to promote and address issues such as deforestation, ecosystem degradation, illicit wildlife and timber trafficking, climate crisis, unsustainable fishing, and environmentally harmful subsidies, as well as to take steps to transition to a circular economy. And I guess this comes on the back of a story we discussed last week, which is about China making some commitments for 2060. So a lot of talk, and we saw the UK Prime Minister on the TV talking about biodiversity loss and saying that we must act now. Really good news that lots of leaders around the world are talking about it. Clearly noticeable by their absence are one of the biggest
contributors,
contributors both good and bad, in our friends in the United States. So that was a little bit disappointing, but good to see that these initiatives are going on in the world and getting more notice, traction, and noise, really.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think probably if you look at USA, China, Russia and India and Australia to a certain extent, Brazil probably less so, it's global trade that needs to bite these countries. It needs to be less about getting them agreement. If Donald Trump loses business, loses exports because the US is not committed to climate, improving the climate or helping these particular sustainability goals, he'll act because he doesn't like it hitting his pocket because it won't make America great again.
I think you've previewed a story we're going to cover later, but yeah, I think if the economic benefits are there, then these things are much more likely to happen.
Yeah, but I didn't pick up on the environmentally harmful subsidies. So you said earlier, is that
well? What's if you the think about that, I mean, just in recent memory, if you think back to some of the EU farming subsidies and some of the fishing subsidies, where they'll throw back fish they've caught that are already dead and throw them back into the sea because they can't use them, or they'll build, you know, the infamous grain mountains or butter mountains of food because farming is being subsidized in slightly strange ways.
I get you. I see. So it's essentially reversing environmentally friendly harmful subsidies.
There's a really good article, just to give a mention to there's a site called Eco Warrior Princess, and an article by Polly Cunanan, which does a kind of roundup of some of the key themes that have come out of Climate Week 2020. And I thought it was giving that a mention because some of the topics that she mentions, I think, really sum up, you know, the big issues that we're facing. So, you know, she mentions climate change impacts everyone. And it's true, no matter where you are in the world, it has an impact. And you know, he says we are all interconnected. Everything that we do impacts other people, and what other people in other countries do impacts us.
And really,
in order to address it, we need leadership, and we're still looking for that leadership. And one of the things we need to do to fix things is involve the private sector. So, you know, back to the profit side of things.
Yeah,
we need private sector businesses to step up and take part, and you know, working together across countries, across governments, across business and private is the way we're going to do it. And I think going back to remember the interview we did with Guillaume Lafortunate from the Sustainable Development Report, the
UN yes.
guy, he was talking, he was very optimistic about we can still do that. And that's the, you know, the closing point in this article. So we'll link that up, go and have a read, but it kind of summarizes nicely a lot of the things that have come out in the Climate Week.
The UN is leading. I mean, I've probably never been so aware of the UN now as I have in the past. The UN's always been kind of this large thing that meets in New York every now and then and has no real impact. And I'm starting to get the feel that the UN are really starting to try and make a difference. But instead of it being all being about war, which is what the UN kind of was formed on the back of avoiding, it's now more about a war of a different type, which is...
Well, I think the global goals are a great thing, and they're, you know, and a lot of what we talk about on this podcast, the sustainability issues, is a lot of what the global goals are about, and they seem to be pushing very strongly to get behind those global goals and to see them delivered, so it's good stuff.
Okay.
Sustainability selection.
We were contacted, and we wouldn't normally promote something onto the show quite this quickly, but contacted by an organisation called Wild Things, and they've made a documentary called A Year on the Front Line of Environmental Activism. And the reason for mentioning them today and for getting them in so quickly is that they're running a crowdfund campaign, more of which in a minute, but a really interesting documentary film, which has won lots of awards. And the documentary follows a new generation of environmental activists that are mobilizing against, you know, bigger forces, bigger governments, bigger businesses. And really it's a new generation, because all they've got is their mobile phones. And they're looking to do whatever they can to save the future of the planet. And they're much more motivated to do it than, you know, perhaps the older generations. And so the film's really interesting, and it's got some really interesting sort of footing of, you know, some of the usuals, chaining themselves to bulldozers and fences and some very talented arborealists climbing some very tall trees, which I thought was pretty scary, but, you know, they're well up there. But what they're trying to do with this is take it into schools and to discuss these issues with as many children as they can, because that's the generation that's going to be here to solve and fix these issues. So, as I say, I'm mentioning it today because go and check out the film, go and check out what Wild Things are doing. But they've got a crowdfund on Poseable, but it's running until the 20th of October. They're not looking to range a huge amount of money. They're looking for $35,000, I think. So it's not a vast amount of money. And they just want that to get that out to as many films as they can. So go and check it out. Go and support if you can. And very, very good thing to be doing.
Okay, cool.
Cool.
It's good.
Now on to... some other big sustainability news stories from the week. Have you got your buzzer ready, Russell, for the company section?
I should have got one, shouldn't I?
Well, we might need it here. Evian, a bottled water company, they've launched new bottles made from 100% recycled plastic. Well done. So they've now got 40% of their products that are recyclable. So this bottled water company that actually is a plastic bottle making company is now only making 60% of its bottles from virgin plastic. So I think it's another one of those stories where you think, this is not good news, really.
Well, I mean, what we need is probably this type of water delivered straight into our houses.
A tap.
Yeah, that's what we have, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Yeah.
We got some of the cleanest water in the world, especially in the UK, and developed countries have got water.
All around Europe, yeah.
Now, admittedly, if they're serving a community, helping communities out that, that have limited access to water, it's a different subject altogether. But yeah, it, this does seem, you know, what didn't we dig out a fact, which was that a litre of bottled water takes 4 litres of water to create?
It was something ridiculous like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. So yeah, so that's great. Saving plastic, but not saving water.
Yeah, so more bottled water stories now from Nestle Waters in North America. They're going to use solar power for 20% of their energy needs. So in order to produce bottled water and more plastic bottles, they're going to use solar energy to help them. So maybe produce less bottles or work on some recycling technology or maybe glass.
Who knows? But I mean, glass is heavy, and I understand why the plastic thing is, you get all sorts of other problems. But I noticed that that solar project occupies 47 acres of land, making it one of the largest solar arrays in that state in the US. And they're still only serving 20 to 25% of their needs. I mean, my goodness, how much power they're using. That they can use one of the biggest arrays. So yeah, they're making an effort. Whether this is a good news story or just a story,
I do wonder. I think some of these organisations should really, well, perhaps they hope that the general public won't be aware that this is not really a good news story. It's a story.
Trouble is the bottled water drinking, and Americans are big on drinking bottled water. They just don't care.
Anyway, clothing. ASOS, quite a big international fashion retailer, have launched their first circular fashion collection. And it seems that there's a broad variety of, I think it says, 29 women's, men's and unisex styles. And it seems that they're thinking a lot about the entire life cycle of the fashion, not just its reuse, its disposal, making it from recycled materials in the first place, looking at restyling of things. Yes, I think it's a really good idea that a big fashion name is launching circular fashion as a collection and putting it sort of front and centre of what it's doing.
Yes, definitely good. Funnily enough, first circular fashion was I think in Derelict, which is the Zoolander film, which was taking the mick out of the fashion industry and making everything out of rubbish. But I mean, this is where we need to be. We need to be looking at our wastes and turning it into something, reutilizing it, not just recycling it.
But I did enjoy the collections items include oversized dresses, oversized pants, oversized shoes. But I want clothes that fit, not that are too big. Anyway,
yes,
hydrogen power. Now, we've talked about electric vehicles and electric batteries and things on the show in the past, but hydrogen, if we can tame it, has got to be the way forward, because it's everywhere in the air around us. But Airbus has announced plans for the world's first zero emission aircrafts that run on hydrogen, and they're targeting 2035. Imagine that, if all the planes flying around the skies were zero emission hydrogen craft. That would be an amazing
impressive achievement.
It seems that they are concepts at the moment, but you know, they're obviously putting a lot of effort and weight behind this, and I think we need to see more organizations, you know, at least trying to make these sorts of changes and moves.
Yeah, and the COVID has devastated the manufacturing industry that supports airlines, because obviously nobody's buying new airplanes and the switch. So this is a prime time for them to switch and swivel and find this new technology that means that the next set of planes that are bought are far, far more sustainable. Though I don't know if I'd fly on a plane that was made of wholly recycled products, but you never know.
Yeah, be interesting. next, wine. And a company called Proudpour. Proudpour is a wine brand.
Wine.
A wine brand, yes. Yeah. And they've produced a Sauvignon Blanc label. Save the ocean. Sauvignon, they're calling it. It's quite a nice and they're using the funds from those wines to fund restoration efforts for wild oysters, and they're doing a Pinot wine as well. A Pinot Noir is looking to fund improvements to bee habitat. So by drinking wine, you can save the oysters, save the bees, and do some good. So Rosé for Reefs was another one. Save coral reefs by drinking rosé.
If only I drank alcohol.
indeed. Yeah. So it's nice to see, and it's something we're certainly within our organisation are looking at, is ways of giving back. And that's quite a tricky area in itself, because there are so many different things you could give to. And which ones should you give to? But in terms of Proudpour, they've made their choices, yeah. And they are, you know, doing the do, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. Donating 5% of his top line revenue as well. I think this is it. It's not just you. If you're going to balance profit, if you're going to make a profit, and to be honest, every company is set up for profit. And until capitalism comes crashing around our feet and we turn into a socialist state, that's going to be the case.
If we don't make a profit, how can we then reinvest in sustainability initiatives?
That's right. We need to, over and above just stopping doing stuff altogether.
Okay. Nice. More hydrogen now. Hydrogen-powered train in the UK has made its maiden journey.
Mm.
There's a prototype called the Hydroflex, has made a 25-mile round trip and got up to 50 miles an hour. So really much the same as the airplane we just talked about, only this is due to come in a lot sooner, potentially 2021.
That's impressive.
Imagine that there's no diesel engines or electric engines, they're all hydrogen.
Well, this fits very much into a better ideal. The electric car revolution that we're seeing at the moment is one fueled, unfortunately, that 50% of our electricity in the UK is generated by burning fossil fuels. So essentially, whatever you do, you'll be charging your electric car off gas or coal.
Gas and coal, yeah.
And so, a ridiculous situation to be in. But if we move to hydrogen cars, this is, I think the primary output of a hydrogen car is water, isn't it?
It's a bit of vapor, a bit of steam.
Bit of vapor, steam, yeah. Which essentially is no damage, zero damage at all. Yeah. And so this concept of zero emissions, instead of just talking about electric, we want to be talking about zero emission vehicles. Yeah. And that includes these hydrogen ones, which is great. I think this is brilliant news.
Yeah. I think hydrogen will be the way forward. The electric is albeit better than internal combustion, is a stopgap.
Yeah.
An interesting piece of news here. Using food waste as your packaging for your food. So there's an Israeli food tech startup called WCycle. It's developed a plastic-free packaging made from sugarcane waste. And this is obviously fully compostable, but you can use it in the freezer, or you can put it in the oven and it will take wet food and hot food. And because it's made from sugarcane, it obviously just degrades when you finish with it. So the temperature range is amazing, minus 40 degrees C through to 270 degrees C. So that's just, you know, imagine if all your ready-packed food, pre-packed food, instead of the plastic trays that they come in today, came in this plastic-free sugar cane.
And presumably you can give them to your kids to suck on if they're needing a sugar rush.
I'm not sure what they taste like. I haven't tried one. Maybe we could get a sample and chew on one before the next episode. But
live on air. Hello again. That's a real good greeny sustainable subject. I like that.
Yep. So dual flush toilets. I had always been brought up to believe that if you had a water-saving dual-flush toilet, that would save you water. You would need less water per flush. You just do a tiny flush or a really big flush. But he said that there's been a report this week that says that between 5 and 8% of these toilets are leaking and that billions of litres are being lost every week from these dual flush toilets. We're building more homes, putting more dual flush toilets in, making the problem even bigger. And there seems to be a problem with the valve in the casing, which doesn't sit properly or return properly in most of these valves.
And it runs into overflow all the time.
Yeah, so it's just constantly running into overflow. Not great news. There's no solution suggested in the story, but just saying that the research says that there's a problem with these dual flush toilets, which is
as
we thought. And I guess that's
technology that's going to fix a problem, not just the problem. What are you doing to me here?
But some of the things, once upon a time, people thought smoking was good for you.
But flushing the toilet isn't.
We have to be prepared to change our views as our understanding changes. And we'll watch with interest. Finally, on the kind of the sustainable tech news, a company in Swindon, UK, has figured out how to recycle polystyrene.
Which is
fantastic, because polystyrene is a really difficult kind of plastic type material. You've all seen it in packaging and kind of bubbly stuff and kind of round electronics, and it's very difficult to reuse or recycle, and it all basically goes to landfill. But this company called Recycling Technologies in Swindon has worked out a way of breaking it down with numbers of different chemicals and turning it back into things like yogurt pots or drinks containers and so on. So another great piece of tech to reduce the plastic waste.
I suppose you always hear that word, they use a range of different chemicals to break it down. You kind of go, every chemical reaction tends to have a waste product. What happens with that waste product? On the surface, you must admit, if you get any new white goods or anything, they are absolutely packed with polystyrene. There's nothing you can do but to bung it into the general waste. It's not recyclable. So, a lot of companies have managed to work out ways of using cardboard packing better and such the like. You don't get so much packaging with polystyrene, but where it is a lot of it.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Because it was climate week this week, as we mentioned at the start of the show, a new clock was unveiled in Union Square in Manhattan. Huge clock on the side of a building. And this has got a lot of press coverage because it's highly visual. And what they've done is they've set it for the 7 or so years that we have to stop global warming. I think it's the 1.5% rise in temperature there they've identified as the deadline. And so they've put the deadline 7 years, 103 days, 15 hours, 40 minutes and 7 seconds on a building. And it's massive. And it's going to keep ticking down all the way through to that deadline. And I guess it comes on to the action we're going to discuss later in the show is, how do you raise awareness about the issues? And a ticking clock is a good way to make people think.
Oh. And in the heart of America, heart perhaps of business America as well. I visually, it's great idea, presumably, and hopefully it's solar panel powered.
Mm. Yep.
I didn't read that bit, but 7 years and 100 days is a bit grim of a view, isn't it? People were talking 50, 60, 70 years, and we got people setting 30, 40 year targets for making a difference. And we're saying, no, none of that. Unless you're aiming for 2025, you're too late.
Yep.
Anything after this is this, what you need is reverse technologies after that. You need to be sucking CO2 out of the air, which there was a power system for that, but we'll talk about it one day.
Yep. Not only was it Climate Change Week or Climate Week this week, it was also the first ever International Day of Awareness of Food Loss and Waste Reduction.
Snappy title.
It's a very snappy title. It comes from a teeny little organisation called the UN General Assembly.
Heard of them. So,
they just wanted to highlight the idea that there's plenty of food in the world. But about, I say, 14% of what's produced is lost just through selling, harvesting, and general wastage. So they've set up this International Day of Food Loss and Waste Reduction to try and raise awareness and tackle the issues. So one to revisit next year and see if they've made any progress.
Yeah, it's an interesting phrase. Are they called food loss? How are they defining the difference between food loss and food waste? Is intriguing. And there's an interesting quote there. What's his name? Antonio Guterres.
Yeah.
Food loss and waste is an ethical outrage. In a world with enough food to feed all the people everywhere, 690 million people continue to go hungry. So there's a couple of interesting points here that we can produce enough food on Earth to feed everybody, even the 7 billion. Yep. It's just we're so rubbish at distributing it that people are dying of hunger.
Yeah. But good news, because California has voted to protect the Joshua tree. You a fan of you too, Russell?
I have my moments.
They're going to protect that album and make sure it survives for into prosperity. So,
and it was vinyl, so it's very fragile.
So Bono will be around delighted for the foreseeable future. not that kind of Joshua tree. It's actually the actual Joshua tree.
Should have read this in advance.
Under the California Endangered Species Act, they've highlighted the Joshua tree as one of the things they are going to protect because they've got a bit of an inhospitable climate at the moment with wildfires and things going on around them. They need to take steps to keep the habitat suitable for the trees to survive in. And they're fairly kind of iconic looking trees, really. So
And they got a very small ecosystem. They're not everywhere, are they? Are they in the Mojave Desert, was it, that I see? There's actually a Joshua Tree National Park as well. So there's not a lot of them. I think, again, with anything, it's just this one tree, but if you look at how that tree influences the desert region, and we think of deserts as barren, but they aren't really. Most of these which got any form of vegetation have got a wealth of wildlife, and of course this one tree can make one hell of a difference.
More on trees, and this time mangroves. And mangroves are incredible because they're about as good as a rainforest for absorbing carbon dioxide, and there's huge amounts of them. But the problem is, like other forested areas, they're under attack from deforestation and urban development and things like that. And the bad news this week is that the Brazilian government have revoked the regulations that were put in place to protect those mangroves. So this is a very definite step backwards. And some environmental groups have called this a crime. And yeah, I can absolutely understand why. This is a bad news story.
Still didn't turn up at the thing this week.
Yeah.
Climate change thing.
Our action for this week, and this one is something that everybody can do, no matter where you are in the world, what your views are, what your economic ability is, or what you own or what you have. Everybody can take this action, and that action is to talk about the issues and spread the word. You know, you could, as a very first step, and we hope you do, listeners, is to share this podcast with 20 of your friends. So if you went and did that now, you would vastly expand, you know, awareness of the sorts of sustainability and environmental and climate issues that we discuss every week on the show. So, you know, one thing that we can all do is talk about the issues, and just in your groups, to others. You don't even have to take action. Talking about it, raising awareness. It's very simple to do, and everybody can do it.
It's free.
And it's free, absolutely free. Doesn't require any technology.
Me, talk out loud, Mike.
I know.
What do you like? You know I'm a bit of a shrinking violet from any conversation.
So a few kind of tips, because if you're not, you know, we talk about this all the time, it's easy for us and we talk a lot on the show, but a few tips, because it's not always straightforward, but you could talk to somebody. Just start with a really easy question, like, how do you feel about the climate emergency? That doesn't offer any opinion, it just gets the conversation started. And really, it's not about naming, shaming, accusing people. It's about learning together, trying to discover what the truth is, starting to accept the fact that the climate is changing, whoever's fault that is, it is changing, and having a talk about that. And it's important when you have these conversations that you, you kind of meet people in the middle. You don't try and impose your views, you know, understand where they are. They may not have the means that you do. They might not be in the same position as you are. You know, somebody in an African third world country is going to be in a very different position to myself and Russell. And, you know, don't try and, you know, force the issues upon people and say, you've got to change to shampoo bars and bamboo toothbrushes. Try and have a more subtle conversation and address the issues indirectly.
I think that's quite important, because I mean, there's kind of a running joke about vegans, for example. I've seen on a number of TV programs, Mock the Week, for example, they have a go at Ramesh Ranganathan, who is very openly vegan, and they joke, oh yeah, you've never gone on about it. And the trouble is when people have got a very strong point of view, whenever we've got a very, and they're really committed to it, they're keen to get other people involved. And I've got no real problem with that. I'm not a vegan. But I also understand that eating the amount of meat that the human races or this developed world has come to eat now, or the levels it's eating at, is having a detrimental effect, not just on climate change, but generally in the world. We're bulldozing forests to grow soy to feed our cattle. So if you can get the facts across, and people can perhaps better understand the problem if you know about it, or if you want to learn more, the best thing is to ask somebody, because they might know something quite insightful.
So that's the action for the week. Just start talking about it and sharing it, raise awareness.
I'll try.
Tesco this week has set a 300% sales target for plant-based alternatives for meat. Tesco's become the first UK retailer to set a sales target for plant-based alternatives to meat, as it steps up its efforts to offer shoppers more sustainable options. So it's committing to these boosting sales of meat alternatives by 300% within 5 years. And I think the thing about this story was not so much it's Tesco, it's a supermarket, or it's a 300% or whatever the number is. It was more about the fact that there's a commercial consideration now which is pushing the meat-based alternatives. And once business starts to push sustainability and the issues, and in this case, meat-based alternatives, because they see some prosperity in it for them.
Yeah,
that's when these things can really take hold. And you know, if retailers are saying plant-based alternative meats are going to be a big revenue generator for us, then those plant-based alternatives are going to grow. And so, that was a thing about this story that I thought, oh, that's a really different perspective that Tesco are taking here.
Yeah, I suppose. And you think about, you know, we worked in the larger businesses. Not, I haven't worked in retail like that, obviously. But when they set a target, which means they're committing resources to advertising, promotion, putting those products very front and center instead of things which are perhaps more snack based, or, you know, because if they want to hit that sales target, which they're going to be held to by their management, then they need to do stuff in the store. And it should end up with somebody going into Tesco's is being very, very aware of meat-free products, alternatives. And I think that's the big game out of it. The fact calling it a 300% sales target is an interesting way of selling it, so to speak. But I think it's a good news story, because you're right. If somebody like Tesco's can turn around the eating habits of its customers, absolutely, that could make quite a difference. Yeah.
And if you listen to one of our previous episodes on the podcast, you'll know that we're not always complimentary about the supermarkets, but in this case, I think this is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Flooding now has left South Sudan facing the threat of catastrophic hunger levels. Now, I raised this story because we've mentioned wildfires in a few of the previous weeks on the podcast, and yes, that's not good news for the people of California. However, in Sudan, some 700,000 people are in crisis after floodwaters swept across the country. It submerged villages, lands, livestock, and it's covered vast areas of the country. And what it's done is it's, you know, not only flooded their village, but it's killed their livestock. It's ruined their crops. So not only do these people not have anywhere to live, they have nothing to eat. And so, you know, there's a lot of news about California wildfires. That's not good, but it's not on the same level as this kind of flooding where hundreds of thousands of people cannot eat. Their food has gone.
Yeah.
And so it kind of puts into perspective, you know, these different
disasters. Because the wildfires, all said and done, are predominantly an affluent society.
Yeah.
So people are getting evacuated. There's been very few deaths for the size, for the magnitude of fires that have been. And a lot of it's insured loss. Mm-hmm. And people have moved into hotels or other properties, and they've gone with, you know, okay, they've lost a home, and I get it. And that's very upsetting in itself. But these people have been knee deep in water since June. I mean, that's that. If we had a flood that lasted a week in Britain, we'd be complaining to the government and saying, what are you doing to stop this kind of flooding from the sky? But these people have been having it for 4 months. I mean, that is all the way through COVID.
And not only that, they've got kind of almost a civil war going on in the country as well. So, you know, I just wanted to put this story out there because, you know, it just puts into perspective some of the other things that we do talk about.
Hadn't heard it on the main news.
No, exactly.
Not a thing. Not a thing.
Clean energy now. And do you know the difference between nuclear fusion and nuclear fission, Russell?
Well, one's done in a nuclear plant and one's done in the sun.
Okay. it seems that there is a difference. In the way that the atoms are smashed together.
Yes.
In that one needs a nuclear reactor and produces waste material and things like that, whereas the fission one is a lot cleaner, produces no carbon, sulfur or nitrogen emissions and things like that, and from what I can tell, produces a lot more energy for your effort, so to speak, in very simple terms. And it's hit the news headlines this week because Amazon and Microsoft are putting $10 trillion into this initiative to provide what they call unlimited clean energy for the planet. I mean, that is an eye-watering amount of money, $10 trillion. But
that is bonkers amount of money.
You don't have organizations like that putting that amount of money into something that's... there's one quote here. A tablespoon of liquid hydrogen fuel produced the same energy as 28 tons of coal. A tablespoon versus 28 tons of coal.
And virtually zero emission. I suppose the only thing that's always been the barrier to fusion is essentially you're creating, as I understand it, plasma, if I remember correctly, which is where the sun comes in. The sun is a permanent fusion reaction. Unlike fission, which produces all those outputs. In terms of nuclear disasters, you're talking about the loss of a city. In terms of fusion disasters, you could be looking at destroying a country. It is a risky game, but maybe it's just because it was the way they were trying to achieve it before. Maybe we're on closer to it. It'd be fantastic if they did manage to do it. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. As with all the stories, it's linked in the show page, and there's a lot more detail around the technical aspects of this.
And just to say, you know, Russell's explanation of fusion conversion
may not be
unscientific. Might be rubbish.
Absolutely.
Fact or fake?
So now it's time for fact or fake, and a fact or fake with a difference. But before we start, I had a quick look through the listeners' responses to fact or fake, because we have out on our Instagram feed, you can look at all our fact or fakes and you can go and vote on them and see what you think. So, and it's mainly those people I hope who haven't listened to the show and don't know which is which.
That would be cheating otherwise. But,
I just pulled a few out. 65% of people don't believe there's any such thing as plastic rocks. Which we know not to be true.
No.
67% of people can't believe that your jeans are as clean after 12 months as if they would be if you wash them regularly. 57% of people think you can't generate solar power at night. That's it, no solar at night. Not true. 58% don't think that Einstein came up with the photoelectric effect that powers our solar panels. And 67% think the smallest you can get a solar panel is 1 inch. Mm-hmm. You can't go any smaller than that. So I think it's safe to say our educational work is not done, Russell. We've got
a way to go. I looks like I'm better than 67% of the population. That makes me happy.
It may be. So it's a turn the tables this week, and it's me trying to answer.
Yes,
is a fact or fake.
And I randomly thought, well, what can I do? Is environmental disasters of the past I was going to go for. And so I have picked out the disaster that happened in the Gulf of Mexico in 2010.
Okay.
So how familiar are... Well, just this one disaster.
Oh, okay.
Fine. Okay. So I'm not, you know, there are other disasters may have happened.
Okay. I'm aware of it.
okay. How aware? So, thinking about that one, the Gulf of Mexico oil disaster pumped over 100 million gallons of crude oil into the ocean until it was capped after 2 months. Is that fact or is it fake?
Yeah, I think that's a fact. I think it was pretty bad.
It was. I mean, the 100 million gallons is pretty bad. Unfortunately, it was 2 million, 200 million gallons of crude oil that made its way into the Gulf of Mexico. And it took 87 days to cap it.
So nearly three months.
So nearly 3 months, yeah. I thought 100 million was bad enough. And
worse than you remember.
Absolutely horrendous situation. Okay, so obviously 3 months. In that 3 months, they attempted to plug the wellhead with things like heavy mud, rubber, and golf balls. Is that fact or fake?
I think I remember hearing them trying all sorts of different things. I think they tried to blow it up at one stage as well, didn't they? I think that's a fact. I think that's true.
It is true. It is a fact. Throwing golf balls at it was a bit surprising.
In the oil well.
But they everything failed, and they even when they lowered a 4-story high dome on top of the wellhead, and they had a separate pipe to go out to bleed the oil off into a pipeline, that got clogged with gas. Well, ice and water. I mean, I don't know how a pipe that can take oil gets clogged by water.
There we are.
Eventually, they capped it using designed a special cap, as you said, after about 80 days, and then it was cemented shut just a month later. So they managed to close it off. But odd things they tried, but probably for good reason. I think the big thing out of that one is they didn't know how to stop it. They'd never tried to stop something this big. Okay, so today the Gulf of Mexico has recovered better than expected, and the seafood is safe to eat. Is that fact or fake? Oh. 10 years on.
10 years.
It's recovered better than expected, and the seafood is safe to eat.
Oh, the seafood are going to be scurrying around eating stuff off the ocean floor. So you're saying the seafood's safe to eat. I'm going to say that's fake. I'm going to say it's still not safe to eat.
Well, surprisingly enough, that's a fact. It is safe to eat. Wow. Yeah. Because it took place 40 miles or so offshore, it didn't affect a lot of the damage was done at lower levels. However, the scientists are still in a 10-year program of working out its impacts. And I've seen some pretty horrific stories about what's happening at the very bottom of the ocean.
Amazing that wildlife can recover when it's left alone, isn't it? One of those stories.
It
can recover.
And that brings me to my final one.
Okay. How many so far?
One
out of three.
One out of three. So you could get a 50% on this one.
Okay.
The Gulf of Mexico has a natural population of oil degrading bacteria, which helped with the recovery. Is that fact or fake?
Natural oil degrading bacteria. Oh. Yeah, I think that's a fact. I think it does.
And you'd be right to say that. So well done on your 50% score. It is helped by, as I said, it's 42 miles offshore, but there has got this amazing bacterial capacity to eat oil, and therefore the recovery's moved faster than it had. But one thing to comment is there's corals 15 miles offshore, and they aren't faring very well because they're sitting essentially under what was deemed to be an oil rain.
So there we have it. A slightly different fact or fake this week. Thank you for that, Russell.
I enjoyed that.
To see that I'm equally as bad at it as you are. If any listeners want to take part or suggest fact or fakes for us to use on the show, then please get in touch. We'd be delighted to try them. And that's the end of fact or fake for this week. And finally, before we go, and I did enjoy this story, swearing parrots have been separated after telling folk where to go. Five African grey parrots at a Lincolnshire Zoo believed to be a bad influence from each other. They've been separated after learning to swear. The parrots named Billy, Elsie, Eric, Jade and Tyson joined the colony of 200 grey parrots in August, but they started to encourage each other to swear. the park keeper said, they're quite used to having parrots swearing, but we've never had five at the same time. The parrots have since been distributed to different areas of the park, so they do not set each other off. And the park keeper says, I'm hoping they learn different words within the colonies. But if they teach the others a bad language and I end up with 250 swearing birds, I don't know what we'll do.
He says there, when a parrot tells you to F off, it amuses people very highly. Yeah. So that's good. It's just if you've got 250 telling you to F off, I don't know if you'd go to a zoo, would you?
Yeah, and the park is also home to parrot Chico, who made headlines after learning to sing a range of pop songs. I've got to go to this park. Sounds brilliant. As always...
Lincolnshire, okay.
You can find links to all the stories we've discussed on our show page at greenelephant.show. If you've got any stories or comments you want to share, then find us across social at greenelipod. If, like Wild Things documentary, you want to reach out to us and we'll give you a mention, then please do. We're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher and TuneIn. It'd be absolutely brilliant if you could subscribe, and even better if you could give us a review. Until next time, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week.